Hi, welcome to the Berry Nation podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April.
I'm Jason.
I'm Natalie.
And if you're watching, you know we are welcoming a brand new expert to the Berry Nation podcast, and we are so excited to have his expertise on today's topic. Please welcome to the show, Dr. Panight.
Hi.
We are so excited to connect with you. You are an expert in pain management. Well, and you're a bariatric surgeon, you know, on top of all of the other amazing things that you do. But pain management after bariatric surgery is something every patient thinks about. Jason just got out of a revisional surgery. He is fresh off of his experience of that. And managing pain after surgery can be a stressor for patients. So if you're listening, you're watching to this episode and you are pre-op, you have found it at the perfect time, because in this episode, we're going to teach you some questions that you can ask your surgeon or some things to think about when you're advocating for your management plan after surgery. And if you're post-op, but you know, maybe you have a revisional surgery coming up, or you have just another surgery along your health journey, understanding that you can advocate for your pain management plan after that procedure is critically important for our long-term success. So before we dive into the conversation, though, we want to hand it over to Dr. Panight to introduce himself.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for the invitation to participate. So my name is Lucian Panight. I am a general and bariatric surgeon. I practice in Minnesota. And I moved here 3 years ago, and I am in private practice. So around that time, we started an outpatient bariatric center here in town, and it has grown successfully. We recently received accreditation as a center of excellence from the American College of Surgeons and ASMBS. So we are very excited about that. But I have been in practice for 12 years post-training. I've been doing this for 20-something years altogether. I love it, and very excited. And I like how things have evolved in our field. And I'm very excited to speak about pain control after bariatric surgery.
Oh, we are pumped. I know Jason and Natalie are equally excited. Natalie's been through three bariatric surgeries. Jason's been through two. I've been through one, right? Natalie, do you remember kind of worrying or thinking about pain management before you went into your three procedures?
Yeah, not the first two. I was very young. I was basically a pediatric bariatric patient at 15. But I remember very specifically, they gave me Vicodin and to help me post-surgery. And I remember I would pass out. I would sleep for like 18 hours in a row. It was insane. I felt groggy. I felt honestly pretty terrible. And I remember going into my most recent surgery in 2020 and being like, no Vicodin, nothing that is going to make me pass out. Like, I can't handle it. And my experience was so much better post-op. So I am so glad to talk to you, Dr. Panight, because I think this is a huge topic, and I think we all deserve to have this info in our back pocket going into surgeries.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, this is a really important conversation for us in Berry Nation. For that reason, Jason's actually allergic to opioid pain medication, so this conversation is timely for him. And it's important that you guys know as well, this podcast is one of the first podcast episodes that is being sponsored by an outside organization. So today's episode is brought to you by Pacira. They're the makers of Exparel, and Exparel is a non-opioid pain medication. The reason that we are so excited about this is Pacira is allowing us to bring forward this education to you when and where you need it. I have members of my extended family that are currently battling opioid addiction, and it's awful. It's just the worst thing ever. And we know that this is an epidemic in America and in other countries. So to know that we have options when it comes to the type of pain medication we choose to onboard, beyond powerful, beyond powerful. So we're thankful for the sponsorship. We're thankful to be able to bring this education to you. And Dr. Panite, we're very thankful for your expertise to guide us through this conversation. So if you guys are ready, I say, let's dive in. So as a general and bariatric surgeon, can you explain the types of surgeries that you typically perform?
Yes, I'll be happy to. So I think the most common operation performed for bariatric surgery in the United States and the world is the laparoscopic slit gastrectomy. So this is also my most common one in the bariatric realm. And I also do perform laparoscopic gastric bypasses and revisional operations. But in addition to this, I'm a general surgeon, so I also perform abdominal hernia repairs and operations for gastroesophageal reflux disease or gastroparesis and other types of general surgery procedures.
Well, and Jason is just recovering from his second round of bariatric surgery. Maybe this would be a good opportunity to just share with people, if this is the first episode you've ever watched, what types of surgery have you had, Jason?
So I started with the sleeve back in 2020, and I was just revised to the SADI, which is the single astomosis duodenal switch, and which has I'm on the ninth day of recovery from. Just had surgery 9 days ago, so 9 days post-op in Dallas, Texas, and I'm now back home in Jacksonville, Florida. So
doing miraculously well, I might add. Yeah, 9 days post-op.
I'm trying to do other things. I'm hitting my water goals. I'm hitting my protein goals. I'm really surprised at how well I'm doing, honestly.
I think so are a lot of us, but we're happy that you're doing so well. I had VSG in July of 2019, but Nat, you've had three surgeries. What are yours?
I did. I had the lap band done in 2009, converted to a plication after some serious complications. And then after a decade of yo-yo dieting, all of that, I found out that my sutures had come undone, and I was converted to the VSG in September of 2020.
So as you can see, we have a lot of surgical experience on this screen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then Dr. Panite, however many surgeries you've done, I'm sure we're up to the thousands at this point. I mean, it's how we roll. So with all of these surgeries kind of under your belt as a surgeon, how do you prepare your patients for surgeries? Or do you notice that they're focusing on certain things before surgery?
Yes, absolutely. So I think the most important thing is to establish a trust in the patients, to create a warm and comfortable environment so that the patients form a connection with you. If I were a patient, I feel like this is the, or I should say, us as surgeons have the greatest privilege to have the patients trust us with their lives and their bodies. So that should not be taken up lightly by anybody. With regards to bariatric surgery, this is a special field that we work in. You establish a connection with these patients that doesn't just end the time of the operation, which may be the case when you remove a gallbladder or you fix a hernia. This is a relation that lasts for life in many cases, and the patients keep coming back, and we encourage them to come back, and that will lead to success in many cases. So it is very important to establish this trust and this deep connection with your patients. But during this process, complete openness is very important, and encouraging patients to talk about everything that is of concern to them. And of course, that includes pain. A lot of times during the preoperative phase, which depending on insurances may last somewhere between 3 to 6 months, people want to need to learn about diet, about how their bodies will change, what exercises they will be able to do and not after surgery. So this is a preparation phase that is very important to address all those things. And also it is important to talk about what is going to happen at the actual operation. I always tell my patients that the operation is the easiest step of the whole process. My work takes about an hour, but the hard work starts only afterwards. And it is very important for them to understand this. A surgery is, we always say surgery is only a tool. It gives you the chance to start over again, but you need to work hard with this tool, and we need to teach them what to do and, in order to be successful. So during this pre-surgery time, it's also important to discuss pain management plans for after surgery, and particularly if there are non-opioid options. And luckily for us, there are more and more options nowadays, but it is important to try to minimize opioids in the bariatric population, in my opinion. Because due to their weight, many of these patients get rid of the anesthetic much harder after surgery. They retain to some of those, and including narcotics. And it is not uncommon for a bariatric patient to be really groggy for hours after an operation. And I think it's a combination of the narcotics and the other anesthetics that some of them get deposited in the fatty tissues, and they slowly get released, and it takes a while for them to be able to clear their head. And the more narcotic, now any surgery is a trauma to the body, obviously, and we try to minimize the trauma as much as we can. And we have the luxury nowadays of doing minimally invasive operations, either through laparoscopic or robotic means, and those decrease the trauma significantly when comparing with the open surgeries that were done in the past. But nonetheless, any operation still hurts. And if people take narcotics now to mitigate the pain, and that leads to them not being completely clear, that can create a problem. They may not be able to walk. They may be unsteady, and they may have nausea or vomiting, and that can lead to more discomfort. So embracing the non-narcotic medications, I think it's a very important part of this immediate journey of the bariatric patient.
Well, it's amazing. You brought up two things that really kind of hit home, is that one, your practice really works with people ahead of time to let them know about the mental aspect of this journey that they will be facing, because a lot of centers don't. And so a lot of people don't realize how tough the mental side of things are until afterwards. And then they're scrambling, looking around, trying to figure out kind of what's going on. So that's amazing. But also the second is you talking about, you know, going through pain management, because nobody ever talked to me about that in my program. And, you know, like I said, I'm highly allergic to any of the narcotic-based pain meds. And you mentioned in the fact that it does take longer for our bodies to process after we have the surgeries like that. I was heavily under for a very long time post-op, the first go round. And I was actually so out of it that even against my chart that said I was allergic, I talked them into giving me morphine, and they gave it to me. And so I came out, when I finally did come out, I was sick, you know, very sick, because of the effects of the morphine that they gave me. And when I was finally lucid enough to ask them why they would give me morphine, they said, well, you asked for it. And I was like, but it's in my chart that I said that I can't have it. So why are you talking? I'm high, like I'm drugged up. Why are you taking the word of me, who's just fresh out of surgery? Like, you guys know better. Like, you guys have the white coats. I was completely flabbergasted. So yeah, it's amazing that you do that ahead of time.
Weight loss procedures such as bariatric or revision surgery can be painful, sometimes even more mentally than physically. Learn about non-opioid pain management options at yourxfactor.com to help ease your post-surgical pain and enhance your recovery experience after surgery. I did have a follow-up question. You spoke about how the medications, the anesthesia, narcotics, those are held in fatty tissue and can dissipate over time. Is it similar to hormones and how hormone, because I had horrible, like a hormone rush after my bariatric surgery, like 2 or 3 weeks post-surgery. Is it processed similarly like hormones are?
Yeah, there is maybe an analogy, but the fatty tissue, it's a place where we as humans secrete estrogens. So the more fatty tissue, the more estrogens you have. Whether you are a male or a female, there is estrogen in males as well. And after bariatric surgery, when that tissue, your body, let's say before, has a balance, right, with the hormonal balance. Now you're melting all that fat, and there is all this rush of substances going in and out of your bloodstream and your head. I had patients their moods were completely uncontrolled. And she realized, she said, what's happening with me? Like, just be patient. Your body will settle. Just give it a chance. But in a way, yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was going to say, as a patient, it's one thing to know that we can go through these, you know, big swings after surgery, but to actually be in the throes of it can be so overwhelming. And what I really appreciate about what you do with your patients is you give them, it's almost like you give them permission, or you give them the space to ask questions about things that they might not be prepared to do. You know, in my own surgical consultation, when I went in, pain management, I think, was discussed. But what I wanted to know is, what is it going to feel like? I wasn't focused on how am I going to manage it. And I wish I would have been focused on that, or my surgeon would have maybe talked about those management strategies, because it was just like, well, you're going to feel pain here, here, and here. When I woke up from surgery, I was in a type of pain and a level of pain I had never experienced in my entire life. And it threw me for a loop. So not only was I in pain, but I wasn't thinking clearly. I didn't feel prepared. I did not know what my pain management plan was. And I just was so desperate to not feel in so much pain. And addiction runs on both sides of my family. And I was very worried about opioid medications or opioid pain management after surgery. And yeah, I think it could have gone differently had I had the ability, or I guess the permission, or just had that conversation with my provider. So the fact that you are, you know, encouraging people, or you're almost drawing the conversation out of a patient, is important, because we don't know what we don't know. And sometimes as a patient, we're scared to talk to you about those things because we don't want to say the wrong thing, or we don't want to offend, or right, we just don't know how to do it. So what you do is amazing.
Thank you. I think being completely open, it's crucial in this doctor-patient relationship, and it should come from both sides.
Yes. Well, and we've kind of been talking about it this entire time so far, but why is pain management, or why is it so important that patients go into their surgeries understanding what their pain management plan is?
It is important because bariatric surgery is not without risks. And historically, some of those risks the biggest risks, in addition to the leak, which everybody is afraid of, but it's a very small risk. But another risk is the possibility of developing blood clots or venous thromboembolism. If you develop blood clots in the legs and those travel to your lungs, this could be a life-threatening condition. So the bariatric population has higher risk for developing this blood clots. So for this reason, we are very aggressive in trying to prevent them. So how do we do that? Generally, people get an injection with some medication that thins the blood prior to surgery and during the time that they are in the hospital. Now, I mentioned that I do some of these operations in select patients in the outpatient center. Well, those people, they are not in a hospital, they go home. So there is no other protection for most of them. And in certain cases, some patients benefit from a prescription to give themselves a shot to thin the blood, but there is a score that we calculate. I don't want to go into too many details, but the best way, what I'm trying to get to, the best way to prevent this blood clots from forming is walking, because that works better than any medication, because when you walk, your muscles are contracting, and that is pushing the blood up and down the legs, and then clots don't form. Clots form when you are immobile because the blood is not moving. So now you just came out of surgery, and we tell you to walk seems a little cruel, but because, like I said, the surgery is a trauma that we create to the body to alleviate other problems that are important, but there is no surgery that is completely pain-free. So it is very important to achieve adequate pain control so that people can get out of bed and walk. And I oftentimes tell my patients, I don't want you to suffer. So please, if you do have pain, ask for pain medication and get out of bed and walk. And ideally, that would be something that is non-narcotic, because we've been talking about narcotics and the problems they can create. And as we just heard, nausea is one of the most common complications. And then the fact that people are not clear, they cannot, they may be unsteady on their feet now if they are under the narcotic influence. But also narcotics also depress the respiratory centers. And like I said, these people come out of surgery, they already may have some of the anesthetics on board that are completely worn out. And now, if they cannot breathe well and their carbon dioxide builds up, sometimes they need to be reintubated. That is extremely traumatic for the patients. It's like usually, it's an extreme, I'm talking about extreme cases, but they, it's not like I have not seen them. It's extremely traumatic for the patients. It is usually happens in a rush, like in an emergency setting, and can happen, you know, in the patient's home sometimes. And sometimes they just need to wait it out until all those things clear from their bodies and the carbon dioxide that is affecting the brain. And, so pain management is very important. It's extremely important, I would say. And trying to find alternatives to narcotic medication, I think it's paramount.
I can tell you, as somebody who just had surgery and has three big bruises on my belly from Lovenox shots, that I would much rather have been walking versus to stop the blood clots and getting shots at my belly. 100%. But I was able to do both. So I got my shots and I was able to walk. So luckily, yeah, I was getting steps in. So that was good. But yeah, as far as pain management goes for me, it was all about the Tylenol. That's what I got. I just got my little powder Tylenol and called it good.
It's pretty incredible the different methods of pain management, as you said, Dr. Panite. The difference between my surgeries in 2009, 2011 was so vastly different from the surgery recovery that I went through in 2020, because I asked, you know, for those different pain management different options, and also just the walking. It does feel so cruel. I remember telling, I was delirious, so like if you're my nurse listening, I'm sorry, but I was very mean. I was like, you're like my least favorite nurse right now, because it'd be like 2 a.m. and he'd be like, you need to walk, you know, get up and walk, and I'm like, no. But it really did. It does help. And I remember every time I walked, you know, after my surgery, after my procedure, every time I walked, I felt better, because you got that blood flowing. And it was nice to enter into my surgery knowing walking will actually help you feel better. It's not for punishment. And that's key.
Yeah, you're right about it.
Well, and the connection that I just made, like, this is just blows my mind, right? So pain management, I guess, really from my patient lens, having a pain management plan is equally important for two ways. Like, you do want to manage your pain after surgery so that you are a little bit more comfortable and that you can recover. But it's equally important for that movement side of things, because yeah, right after surgery, I was up, I was walking, and I got to go home early because I did 10,000 steps, you know, in this short amount of time. And I could show that I was functioning and mobile and that things were rocking and rolling. But if I wasn't managing that pain, if I was under the influence of our narcotic, I might not be able to actually sit up and walk safely. So it's much more than just the pain that we're trying to manage. It's also forward looking and say, okay, what do I need to do as a patient right when I wake up from surgery, even though I know I'm going to be in pain and I'm not going to feel good. If I can move and walk, I'm going to maybe be able to leave the hospital sooner. I'm going to flush out the gas sooner, right? I'm going to be able to do some things. I think from my patient experience, what was missing was the why behind pain management. I didn't understand its important role until exactly what you just talked about.
Yeah. So to go a little bit back, if I may, to walking, it is the absolute single thing that speeds up bowel recovery. We always, you know, if you have been a patient, one of the common questions you will get is, have you passed gas? And doctors are obsessed with this. And the reason is because if you pass gas, this means the pipe is open and the bowel is recovering. But there is unfortunately no medication we can give to expedite the recovery of the intestine. And walking is the only thing that has been shown in clinical studies to expedite that. There are some studies showing chewing gum may help it, but with the bariatric patients, a lot of people don't want them to chew gum. I think it's a little bit of a voodoo there, but whatever, I'm not going to get into that. But walking is in part important for that recovery. So when you are, now, if your bowels are paralyzed, which happens after general anesthesia a lot, and they don't move, you feel nauseous, you feel bloated, you feel distended. So walking helps that level as well. Well, guess what is another side effect of narcotics? It's exactly this, postoperative ileus. They paralyze the bowels.
Learn how to prepare for your upcoming bariatric or revision surgery with resources from yourxfactor.com. Find resources for any stage of surgery, including how to find a surgeon to fit your needs, schedule your consultations, and create a personalized pain management plan.
Oh my God. Every time we talk with experts, I'm just like, all of these things that I wish I knew before I went into surgery. I'm going to say this till I'm blue in the face. We as patients crave this knowledge and this information going into it because we want to be as prepared as possible. So it's just so amazing that you can have these conversations with us because this episode is going to hit people right where they need to know it. And they're going to be able to move through their pre-op and post-operative bariatric experience in a very different way because now you understand the why behind all of these things. Instead of just kind of going with the flow or just, I guess, doing whatever your surgeon or your doctor tells you, you can almost have a conversation with about, or you just have a different understanding of it. So knowing the why behind it, I think, propels us as patients to be better patients because we understand the mechanics behind it.
You need to understand what's happening with your body because otherwise you're baffled, right? Nothing makes sense.
Right. Well, and that kind of leads to the next question we wanted to ask you, which I feel like we've been talking about this entire episode, but you know, how you approach pain management with your patients. So is this just something that you open up the conversation with too, or do you say, well, here's what I would recommend for you because of your patient history, and then let's have a conversation about it, or what do you do?
Well, we talk typically at the preoperative visit. I have a deeper discussion about the pain management, and I wish there will be a day when I will not prescribe narcotics at all, and maybe it will be soon. But, you know, I grew up in Romania and did my medical school in Romania. Narcotics are highly regulated in other countries. In Romania, only people with cancer get narcotics. So I think it's also a kind of setting the right expectations for the patients. And don't get me wrong, I do prescribe narcotics, but significantly less than before. So in terms of the conversation, I explain to the patients that at the time of surgery, we will give them, and I do this for everybody, we will give them a nerve block. And this is what I'm doing with Exparel, the liposomal bupivacaine, that we are talking about today. This is a new modality. It's not new anymore. I've been using it for, I think, I don't remember when it came out on the market, but over 5-6 years, I think I've been using it now. And I noticed a significant difference with it. So how is, what is it in the first place? It is a local anesthetic that bupivacaine is also called Marcaine. And we've been using local anesthetics for decades. But this part, this one, why is it special? Is because it's long acting. So the local anesthetic, this bupivacaine, is packed in some little spheres called liposomes. And those, it's almost like taking one of those long-acting aspirins. You know, they don't just release in the tissues. They break slowly and release a little bit of anesthetic at a time. And then another one of those spheres breaks later. And so basically, instead of being short-acting and lasting for like a couple of hours like normal Marcaine does or lidocaine, this one will give a lasting effect that will go over a few days. And it is injected in the tissues. There are different ways of doing it, but the way I do it, I do a block in the abdominal wall. I do it, like I said, I do these operations laparoscopically or robotically. So with a tiny laparoscopic camera, we can see exactly where the needle goes, and we try to numb basically the nerves that come around our body from the spine, and they wrap around to the front and innervate the abdominal wall. So these nerves travel in between some muscle planes in the lateral abdominal wall. And if you deposit the local anesthetic in that plane, then it slowly gets released. So basically, if you will, the nerves are bathed for a few days in this local anesthetic. So they are numb. It takes care of all the somatic pain, we call it, so the pain in the muscle, on the in our shell. Now we work on the internal organs. It doesn't maybe affect that as much, but it makes a significant difference that I've seen in my patients.
Yeah, actually, when we were preparing for the episode, I got in contact with my surgeon and the surgical team, and they actually used this on me during my procedure, which makes sense as to why I'm doing so well 9 days post-op and had zero pain like post-op. Once everything wore off, like I couldn't even tell I had surgery, to be honest. I was telling everybody that. And I figured out that like each incision site got it as well as the block that you were talking about. So that's why I legitimately feel nothing as of even today, you know, 9 days post-op.
Yeah, so let's say you don't get XPAREL, right? Do you remember your first operation? You probably didn't get it back. Right? So
oh, I did not get it, and I remember it well.
Yeah, so you probably had pain for a couple of days, 5 days, 4 days.
Yeah, I went back to work. I went back to work 6 days after my first sleeve surgery, and I was very tender. I remember having to be very careful, like to make sure that my stomach didn't hit my desk or anything as I was like moving through things. And like even walking upstairs was really hard for me to do. And post-op with this surgery, I flew home 4 days post-op and was fine through the airport, was fine. All my stuff's been good. Like I went back to work 6 days after this one as well and had none of the issues I had with the first.
I tell the patients, that the worst day is the day of surgery, the night of surgery, and then it slowly gets better. So by the end of the 4 or 5 days, you should feel significantly better, and you went to work after 6 days after the first surgery. But now imagine that for 5 days you don't have much pain because the nerves are not sensing the pain, and then this anesthetic doesn't last forever. It wears off eventually, but if it takes a few days, by that time you don't have pain so much from surgery, so it speeds up the recovery significantly.
With my most recent one, and now I'm gonna have to check and see what I got, because there was no real discussion beforehand other than don't give me narcotics. So I don't know what I got. But yeah, I mean, I remember also feeling really, really good. Like I did medical tourism, so I went to Mexico. I remember, you know, driving to San Diego shortly after being in Mexico, walking around like I just felt really good. It makes me think that I have something similar, maybe not EXPAREL specifically, but
Yeah, so I do. Like I said, I cannot always use XPRL, although I would like to. And when I cannot, I do the same blocks with Marcaine mixed with epinephrine generally. So you try to prolong this effect. It's not the same, but it's better than not doing it. So
Right.
it is possible that that's what you had.
Well, and I again, I when I think or when I say pain management, I'm thinking about things that I'm putting in my mouth and I'm ingesting for pain management. It's so powerful to know that pain management has grown so far beyond that. Because as a patient, right after surgery, you're confused, you're in pain, right? You're going through all kinds of things. And to add kind of like a pill management to your list of things to do can be overwhelming. And it can be overwhelming for the people taking care of you. So to know that pain management is more than just what we're taking in by mouth, pain management is what our surgeons and our doctors can be doing, helping us during surgery so that when we do wake up, we are in less pain. Because if I would have been in less pain for, and I was in a lot of pain for about 2 full weeks after surgery, I couldn't sleep. I was having an extremely difficult time, resting. I couldn't eat, right? I was really, my post-op experience was not what I thought it would be. And I was taking narcotics. But after a few days, it dawned on me, oh, I'm not sleeping well, or I'm not resting. I can't do any of these things because I'm not in my right mind up here. And I remember calling my surgeon and I was saying, I am not taking these opioids anymore. I need something else. And it was aspirin or it was something like that. But again, it was just this burden that I was feeling up here. If I was feeling better, if that pain had been blocked for me and I wasn't taking anything in, I would have done more walking. I would have slept better. I would have recovered faster, right? Like I'm sitting here doing the math and I'm like, oh, my post-op experience could have been so different had I listened or watched this conversation before, before my medical procedure. But I think so many of us think pain management is the pills that we take.
Yeah, that's not the case. And it has been a lot of research lately into what we call enhanced recovery protocols, ERPs, or some people call them enhanced recovery after surgery, ERAS protocols. And you have to look to the patient as a whole. And the aim of these protocols is to expedite, as the name says, enhance their recovery. And what keeps people in the hospital? Pain, the ability to eat or not eat, the ability to walk or not walk, and nausea and vomiting. So when all those things disappear, people can go home. So they need to be able to eat and not have nausea. They need to be able to walk mostly, and they need to be able to have minimal pain, ideally, or no pain. And also their bowel function to be recovered, or on the way to recovery. So this everything we do should be aim of enhancing their recovery and helping all those functions.
And you said earlier in this conversation, there are some instances where you do prescribe opioid medications. So what are those circumstances, or what are you seeing in a patient's life that would that propels you to prescribe those types of medications?
So I do please I want do not want patients to suffer, and pain is a very subjective thing. In spite of our best efforts, we cannot predict how everybody will react to what we do. So as part of this enhanced recovery protocols that I adopted years ago, we give patients pain before. Let's talk just about bariatric surgery, but I do this with all my patients, even hernias or everything else. But prior to surgery, a few hours, my patients get some non-narcotic medication that they swallow 2 hours before, and one anti-nausea medication. So although that's on their way to the hospital or the surgery center, they do that. And after surgery, during surgery, we do the block, and they get the medication, which includes narcotics, by the anesthesiologist. And sometimes, but we try to minimize the narcotics to the extent possible and try to use other narcotic medication. We talk about Tylenol. The IV version of Tylenol is very powerful. It works really good. There are non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. The one that is commonly used is called Toradol. Again, a non-narcotic, doesn't affect the bowel function negatively. We try to use this as a first line and the same in the recovery room. But sometimes, in spite of this, people may still have pain, and we use narcotics for what we call a rescue. And the same, once people go home, and especially the patients who are in the outpatient setting, I tell them, try to take the non-narcotics first, but on the other hand, I don't want patients to suffer. And the worst thing can happen when you get surgery is to have so much pain that you need to go back to the emergency room. You are miserable, and now you are in the ER waiting for 2 hours with other people who are there for less important things, maybe. So I do prescribe, I want them to have a few pills at home just in case. But it's sometimes people tell me that I never took any, and they donate them or whatever they do with.
So what should patients do if they would like to pursue non-opioid pain management after bariatric surgery, but their doctors don't offer it? Is there a solution for them, or what would you recommend?
Well, patients, I think the most important thing is for them to understand that there are options. And I think it is their right to request this. And most doctor nowadays should be up to date with the literature and the benefits and not using opioids. And we didn't talk much about this, but there is also a transfer addiction in the bariatric population. You know, people have a tough relationship with food, and that's why they get there. And there is good literature to support this, that sometimes, unfortunately, after bariatric surgery, people transfer the food addiction to other stuff like alcohol or drugs, and sometimes painkillers. And the more of those they have at home, the worse we can do for them as physicians. So I think patients should be aware of that. It's part of the preoperative discussion. They should understand what is happening with their body, and they should have an honest conversation with their physician about the pain management plan after surgery. And if there is no, like I said, maybe everybody will go home with a few pills. But in my practice, when I was a resident, we were giving Percocet like candy. Everybody will go with 30 pills at home. Now, I don't remember when I prescribed Percocet the last time. And I prescribed something that is a little bit less strong. And I just give a few pills. And like I said, I want people to have something for rescue. And most people tell me if they do take it, maybe they take it for the first night after surgery to get a good night's sleep, or the first 1 or 2 days, and then they don't need it anymore. And I had, like I said, I do some of these operations in the outpatient center. And when I do those, people come next day so that we can check on them because they are not admitted overnight. And sometimes we give them hydration just to make sure they don't fall behind with the fluids. But I remember this patient, he came next day, and I asked him, how do you feel? How was your pain? He's like, oh, I feel amazing. I slept in my own bed. I had no pain, and I still have no pain. And I wish that was every patient. It's not the case, but it was just so, so great to see that. And to, it's like, oh, I slept 8 hours last night. That never happens in the hospital. You get woken up every hour or every 2 hours. Somebody's checking your vitals. There's a machine beeping. There is somebody screaming on the corridor. It is amazing to see the evolution of our field. And I think the patients to go back to your question, patients should feel empowered to know in the first place and to know there are options, and they should be able to discuss those openly with their surgeons. And if there are no, if these options are not offered to them, it's not unreasonable, in my opinion, to seek a second opinion.
I appreciate that answer in more ways than I think I could express, or Jason or April or any other bariatric patient. If you were to have this conversation with any one of our listeners, our Bari Nation community members, we have been saying this for quite some time. Do you know what pain management options are available for your upcoming bariatric surgery? YourXFactor.com provides resources and information to help you plan, including what non-opioid options are available. Check it out and talk to your doctor about your plan today. That it is the patient responsibility and also empowerment to advocate for yourself. It is different when we say it as patients versus when a medical professional such as yourself says it. And to know that you and many others that we've interviewed and spoken with can say, I want to make sure that my patients are empowered to advocate for themselves. That in itself is like such a mic drop moment. It's so powerful for so many, because for so many years, and it still happens today, but for so many years prior to today or prior to my surgery, I was not shown that advocacy was possible for myself. And so I hope anyone who is watching or listening really truly listens to what Dr. Panight says. If you got to rewind, please rewind and re-listen, because it is really important to feel empowered to advocate for yourself, because there are so many options now. But I just wanted to thank you for that. Huge.
Yep. Well, and truly, if you are talking with your bariatric surgeon, right, or any surgeon, let's say you're having a different type of medical procedure, think of Jason. Jason, you are allergic to opioid medications. So these options are out there, because Jason is not the only human on the planet who is allergic to these, right? So there has to be other options. And I think sometimes if the doctors say, well, you know, I don't really do that, or I don't do that, the question you can ask is, well, how do you help people who are allergic to those types of medications, right? Because you're not the only one, Jason.
Well, and that's true. And also I would mention, I've had to advocate for myself when I explain the fact that I am allergic, because I've had it downplayed to me so many times. When they'll ask, oh, you know, what happens? You get a little rash. And I'm like, no, you're going to be hanging on to me for a couple of days because I get violently ill, and you're going to have to rehydrate me because I'm not going to stop, you know, being sick all over the place for the next like 24 to 48 hours. Like, it's very bad for me. It's not like I don't break out in hives or get a little itchy scratch that you can give me some, you know, lidocaine for, and I just call it a day. Like, it doesn't work like that. So a lot of times, like, if you do have to stand up for yourself and advocate and say, no, this is really what happens, I don't want it, you know, that may have to happen, but you have to know that you have the ability and the right to do so.
And if you need a safe place to practice these conversations, we have this amazing thing called the Bari Nation Membership Community, where we get together with experts and patients, and we practice advocating for our own needs. We know how challenging it can be from the patient perspective. And you might be thinking that, you know, your bariatric surgery is your fault, or that you've done something to cause this. It's not true, right? Obesity is a disease. It's not a decision. But you do have to make the decision to treat it. And bariatric surgery is the primary treatment for this disease at the moment. And learning to advocate for yourself and your needs, to really talk meaningfully with your surgeon about pain management, can be key to not only your long-term success, but your key to short-term success, to waking up in the hospital and feeling okay, and feeling the energy and empowerment to walk more than you would have before, right? Or to recover at a faster rate. It's all really intertwined in this conversation, just so beautifully, I think, hopefully shows just how connected all of these things are. Dr. Panayat, this conversation has been mind-blowing, more so than what I even thought. I mean, I thought I understood pain management. You have proven I absolutely did not. And I think Jason and Natalie and I, we really feel the same way. Is there one thing that you really hope our listeners and our watchers and our friends leave this conversation with when it comes to pain management?
I think it's important for everybody to understand that there are options out there. And pain is part of surgery, but we have different ways to prevent it in the first place and to treat it in the second place. So have the honest conversation, be open to your surgeon, and don't be afraid. It is your right.
Dr. Panayat, thank you so much for joining us today. If people would like to learn more about non-opioid pain medications, where can they go? Is there like a website they can visit to start educating themselves on the options?
Yes, absolutely. They can go to www.yourxfactor.com.
We've actually been to that website. I've spent a lot of time on that website. It is so informational. We will also make sure that it is linked in the show notes. Again, Dr. Panayat, thank you so much for joining us. This conversation was amazing, and we would love to invite you back to really continue. I think there's so many other things that we can talk about when it comes to pain management and patient advocacy. Just thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
Jason, my friend, you want to take us out?
Yes, ma'am. I want to thank the community for all of the likes, the shares, the subscribes, and telling people that we exist, because there's people out in the world that need help, and we want to give them the help that they need. And just remember to continue to give us the feedback on your favorite podcast player in regards to the podcast, as well as our YouTube channel. And just remember, at the end of the day, you've got this, we've got you, and we will see you next time.
Awesome. Thanks, friends. Bye.
Everybody. Bye-bye.
Indication: Exparel bupivacaine liposome injectable suspension is indicated to produce post-surgical local analgesia via infiltration in patients aged 6 years and older, and regional analgesia in adults via an interscalene brachial plexus nerve block, sciatic nerve block in the popliteal fossa, and an adductor canal block. Safety and efficacy have not been established in other nerve blocks. Important safety information: Exparel should not be used in obstetrical paracervical block anesthesia. In studies in adults where Exparel was injected into a wound, the most common side effects were nausea, constipation, and vomiting. In studies in adults where Exparel was injected near a nerve, the most common side effects were nausea, fever, headache, and constipation. In the study where Exparel was given to children, the most common side effects were nausea, vomiting, constipation, low blood pressure, low number of red blood cells, muscle twitching, blurred vision, itching, and rapid heartbeat. Exparel can cause a temporary loss of feeling and/or loss of muscle movement. How much and how long the loss of feeling and/or muscle movement depends on where and how much of Exparel was injected, and may last for up to 5 days. Exparel is not recommended to be used in patients younger than 6 years old for injection into the wound, for patients younger than 18 years old for injection near a nerve, and or in pregnant women. Tell your healthcare provider if you or your child has liver disease, since this may affect how the active ingredient, bupivacaine, in Exparel, is eliminated from the body. Exparel should not be injected into the spine, joints, or veins. The active ingredient in Exparel can affect the nervous system and the cardiovascular system, may cause an allergic reaction, may cause damage if injected into the joints, and can cause a rare blood disorder. Full prescribing information is available at www.exparel.com/patient. For more information, please visit www.exparel.com/patient or call 1-855-793-9727. You are encouraged to report negative side effects of prescription drugs to the FDA. Visit www.fda.gov/medwatch or call 1-800-FDA-1088.